Good afternoon, everyone. I would first like to acknowledge my co-author, Dr. Dennis Fortenberry. Sexual health refers to an emerging clinical and public health paradigm recognizing the importance of positive sexuality across the lifespan. This paradigm includes, but more importantly, transcends a more narrow focus of adverse outcomes such as sexually transmitted infection and unintended pregnancy. This paradigm embraces the idea that sexual health, particularly for adolescents, is broadly experienced across a spectrum of physical, mental, social, and emotional well-being indicators related to sexuality. In turn, these indicators are important for individual and population-level health because they collectively influence the decisions that people make about their contraception and about STI prevention. From this perspective, the sexual health paradigm offers an important and strategic opportunity for both the evolution and expansion in the framework through which public health approaches primary prevention. Within this expanded framework, traditional disease-oriented action is complemented with a broader understanding of the positive factors shaping sexual behavior, whereby these elements then become important new elements of surveillance. Translation of this new public health philosophy into research-informed public health practice, however, requires a better understanding not only of the positive dimensions of sexual health, but also how this larger construct influences outcomes that are commonly used in behavior and disease surveillance in public health settings. In this vein, the objectives of the current study were twofold. One, to empirically evaluate a multidimensional model of sexual health, and two, to understand the association of sexual health to common public health outcomes, including sexual abstinence, number of lifetime sexual partners, condom use, and STI. Valerie already provided a wonderful overview of the Young Women's Project, so I'll hit the highlights again. This is a longitudinal cohort study of sexual relationships and sexual behavior in middle to late adolescence. These young women were recruited from one of three primary care clinics in Indianapolis and completed quarterly interviews, among other data sources, related to their contraceptive and sexual behavior, their relationship content, and it's from these quarterly interviews that I will talk about both our sexual health dimensions as well as the types of prevention outcomes we're interested in. Multiple partners were possible in each quarterly interview as drawn from each young woman, but in my project, to facilitate analyses, the models were limited to enrollment quarters in which the young woman was not pregnant and reported only one partner. So the final sample size in this project was 242 young women. Our sexual health dimensions were drawn using a well-known World Health Organization sexual health definition as an organizing framework. From our interviews, we selected seven dimensions: relationship quality, sexual satisfaction, sexual communication, sexual autonomy, absence of genital pain, pregnancy prevention attitudes, and condom use efficacy. As you can see in the table, all of these items were multi-item indices with good to excellent scale reliability. Our prevention outcomes. Lifetime sexual abstinence was constructed from two quarterly interview items. First, reporting no to ever having sexual vaginal intercourse, and reporting no lifetime sexual partners. Following, among those who had ever reported sexual experience, we also measured the number of lifetime sexual partners, condom use as a proportion of protected vaginal events in the prior 90 days, as well as any of three STIs, chlamydia, gonorrhea, or trichomonas. Structural equation modeling was used to evaluate both of our objectives. I'm going to walk through a little bit more detail on this in a moment, but for those of you who are not familiar, structural equation modeling is an analytic approach which is used to assess the relationships between multiple variables, particularly in this instance when we're interested in the relationships of multiple variables to a common factor and then subsequently measuring the assessment of that common factor's influence on outcomes of interest. So as part of our objectives, we developed an analytical model, mapping our proposed relationships between the well-being dimensions as well as the outcomes within the principles of structural equation modeling. So in our first objective, we hypothesized that each sexual well-being dimension, which are shown here in blue, individually contributed to a larger common sexual health factor, shown here in green. These individual relationships are signified with solid black arrows. In SEM convention, these arrows point away from the common factors, the underlying dimensions. For each dimension, we estimated both the direction and the significance of the relationship. As part of our second objective, we hypothesized that sexual health as a common factor would individually predict relevant public health outcomes, which are shown here in yellow. The predictive relationships are shown with the dotted black arrows. Again, in SEM convention, arrows point away from the predictive factor up to the outcomes of interest. For each of these outcomes, we again separately estimated both the direction and the significance of the relationship. So turning now to the results. In terms of our first objective, in other words, focusing on the underlying relationships of these dimensions to sexual health, as you can see on the slide, the standardized estimate for each dimension as well as its significance are presented immediately below the blue box. All dimensions were significant underlying components of sexual health. Specifically, in translating these effects, we can see, moving left to right, greater sexual health is associated with greater relationship quality, greater sexual relationship satisfaction, greater sexual communication, greater condom use efficacy, greater absence of genital pain, and greater pregnancy prevention attitudes. Additionally, the model fit indices indicated good to excellent fit of the data to the model. Next, we addressed our second objective, which again focused on examining sexual health as a common factor in terms of its prediction of relevant public health outcomes. Again, the standardized estimate and significance for each of these relationships is given immediately above the yellow boxes. We first found that higher sexual health was significantly associated with sexual abstinence. Among those with any sexual experience, sexual health was also associated with fewer lifetime sexual partners, greater condom use, and absence of STI. So bringing this full circle, what does this mean to us as public health professionals? First, the recent implementation of sexual health as a framework for STI prevention represents a considerable reorientation of public health perspective and effort. I would suggest that this study provides initial support for this reorientation, demonstrating that both sexual health is an empirically coherent, multidimensional construct whose collection of indicators is significantly linked to prevention behaviors and absence of STI. These findings mean that sexual health is indeed more than just a good philosophy about STI prevention. We suggest that, in fact, sexual health is a viable and important public health approach, with a range of indicators that could easily be implemented as part of existing behavioral surveillance systems and whose indicators are associated with four important STI surveillance markers. These analyses are limited by a number of factors, not least of which is the fact that we've focused here only on a cross-sectional sample of data from young women reporting only one sexual partner. As we start to plan where we move from here, we're interested in extending these data to analyses of more racially and geographic samples of young women, as well as the samples of young men. Additionally, we don't have much data as to how these apply to adolescents who choose both same-sex partners or those who choose both same and opposite-sex partners. Moreover, and where my particular passion for sexual health sits, is understanding the developmental trajectory of sexual health. So what happens over time as a young woman gains both competency in her sense of self as a sexual being, but also as she acquires experience within a nascent relationship, which then grows into something larger over time. These things have vital pieces of importance for long-term aspects of sexual health into adulthood. I would like to conclude by giving my thanks to the research staff of the Young Women's Project, without whom none of these data would be possible, as well as to acknowledge the funding sources of the study. Thank you.
We'd be happy to take questions. And please state your name and where you're from.
Jessica Ladd. I'm a PhD student at Johns Hopkins. And I was wondering if you could help me interpret those coefficients a little
sure.
bit. Were those log odds or what?
They're just what standardized estimates. So SEM is the methodology which basically does simultaneous regression models at the same time. So the betas that you saw were similar to what you would see in a linear regression output.
Hi, Cameron Estrich from UIC. I was wondering, do you think there's, did you have the SEM components of sexual health, were they all equally weighted, or do you think there's any purpose to weighting them differently over time?
You know, we did go back and forth about that, but I, you know, my approach to this has been very in line with the holistic idea of sexual health, and that for each young woman, one component or another may exert a different influence at a different point in time, so to constrain them anyway would be to kind of force my view of what is more important. So that's a long way of saying no.
long journey up here. I'm Heather Royer from the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. I'm just really interested in your measure of sexual health, and if you could talk a little bit more about how you came up with the individual subscales or the items that you chose to create each of those individual subscales, and subsequently, is this measure available to other researchers?
I'm glad that you're excited about it, because I'm really excited about this too. So the Young Women's Project was really designed from its inception to be a study of sexual health across time. So the scales that we have chosen represent a lot of forethought that I've done in terms of reading about what should and shouldn't be included. I'm always in the process of thinking about how we can beef this up, certainly. So things that we're looking forward to including in subsequent iterations are sexual self-concept, and for future studies, we don't have necessarily data on this now, but body esteem and other things that are related to sexuality.
Oh, and is it available? Or just contact you?
Contact me. I love to talk about it.
Yes.
Just a quick question. Mm-hmm. Are you also considering asking any questions about history or current coercion or forced sex, given the percentage of women?
Sure, and we've actually, some of the additional outcomes as a preview of coming attractions, we've looked at things that are related to more general aspects of health and well-being. So I've taken this model for a ride, which is pretty exciting, and we found that it actually also predicts lower levels of sexual coercion, better social connectedness, greater self-esteem, and other good things that we like to think about.
So, Devin, you also mentioned connecting it to public health practice and potentially surveillance activities. Could you elaborate a little bit more on that?
Sure. So I think one of the things that we think about when we think of surveillance is what are the popular things that we look for. You know, when I think about surveillance, I think about what are the things that we need to look for to avoid some of the things that are coming down the pipeline. So one of my favorite items in this is sexual satisfaction. So there's very little in the literature about how sexual satisfaction might be a very important element in STI prevention, but the idea that an adolescent woman could be sexually satisfied and happy with her relationship is equally as important as whether or not she feels capable of using a condom, right? These things go hand in hand. So expanding the way that we think about how we prevent STI.
Great. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Trish Davlin, and I'm from Monroe County Health Department from Rochester, New York. And I was wondering if during this, if you've noticed, like, really the component for the female, like, who has the power in the relationship is where they are in terms of not only self, but really the condom use itself.
So, Valerie talked a little bit about some of the items. For example, if we focus on the condom use efficacy, some of these scales do have that implicit power dynamic. The way that these items are worded, where a higher score indicates a young woman's greater capability or efficacy, if you will. So some of those items on the condom use scales would include, I will have a condom available, or I can use a condom, things like that.
Hi, Emer Smith from the state of Maine. I was wondering if you were planning on incorporating any independent measures of stigma as it relates to sexual health and belief around sexual health.
Sure. I can think immediately some of the things that we've done some exploratory models with are perceived. It's not quite getting at what you're asking, but, for example, perceived risk of STI acquisition. And as you might imagine, the higher one's sexual health, the lower their perception of acquiring an STI. We don't necessarily have data that directly address stigma itself, but that's an excellent point. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Devin.